Amazon is a $1 trillion company. Is that accurate? You're approximately valued at $1 trillion?
I think it's close to that, yeah.
Close to that. So why should we give you this money? Why do you need our $3 billion?
Hey, everybody. It's Todd Bishop. Welcome to the GeekWire podcast. And Monica Nicholsberg's here with me.
Hi, Todd.
So I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop, and that's GeekWire civic editor Monica Nicholsberg. We're here on the GeekWire podcast, and we have some Amazon to talk about, Monica.
We do, and some Apple.
Some Apple, exactly. So for people who've been following the show over the past few weeks, you were in New York, what was it, a month ago now?
It's hard to say. It feels like it was yesterday and a year ago. That's kind of the theme of 2018, but it was early November, mid-November.
So you were there for Amazon's HQ2 announcement in first the DC suburbs, Northern Virginia, but then you went up to Queens, New York, which is the focus of our discussion today. There was a fascinating hearing in New York City?
Yes. Yeah. It was the New York City Council.
So tell us about it, because I followed this somewhat tangentially, but I'm just catching up on it myself. So it sounds like there were some fireworks at this thing.
There definitely were. Amazon got a taste of the New York brashness that maybe they weren't anticipating. I don't know. It seemed like they were a little bit overwhelmed by the intensity of the questions that they received from the New York City Council.
So for people who have not been following this story, the two or three folks out there who are listening to this podcast who don't know what we're talking about, Amazon HQ2. Originally, the plan was for Amazon to put 50,000 jobs in one location. They ended up splitting it between Northern Virginia and New York City. And the assumption, I'm sure, on Amazon's part was that they'd be welcomed with open arms wherever they went, because that was part of the RFP, right? The community would love them. I think that was not necessarily the words in the RFP, but that was the gist, right?
Right. Yeah. I think that this the response that they're getting in Queens is coming as a little bit of a surprise to Amazon. I think it shouldn't be a huge surprise if you know Queens, if you know New Yorkers, but, you know, it's been fascinating to compare the reception that they're getting from some of their most vocal critics in New York with the criticism they face back here in Seattle in their hometown. And what this hearing was about was really airing grievances, I think. The New York City Council doesn't have the authority to block this deal, which, like we said, is 25,000 jobs up to 40,000 jobs in Long Island City, which is a neighborhood in Queens that is just across the East River. So it was a little bit of pageantry, but I also think that these council members felt a responsibility to their constituents, many of whom are concerned about the impact on transportation, housing, and I think more than anything else, just the way that this played out. The biggest issues that were raised were the massive incentives, up to $3 billion, that Amazon's receiving from New York City and state, and the lack of transparency in the whole bidding process.
So I know we've got a clip specific to that incentive, the $3 billion in incentives. So let's listen to that now. So who's speaking?
This is Corey Johnson, the Speaker of the New York City Council.
Amazon is a $1 trillion company. Is that accurate? You're approximately valued at $1 trillion?
I think it's close to that, yeah.
Close to that. So why should we give you this money?
So these incentives, they're performance-based, which means that we will not receive any money until we create jobs and make these investments.
But you're worth $1 trillion. Why do you need our $3 billion when we have crumbling subways, crumbling public housing, people without health care, public schools that are overcrowding? Why do you need our $3 billion?
This project is going to provide over $186 billion in positive economic impact to the state over the next 25 years. That includes over $14 billion in additional tax payments.
That analysis was done by someone who was hired by the state of New York, not by neutral third-party academics.
So again, that was Corey Johnson, the Speaker of the New York City Council, asking Brian Huseman, a public policy executive at Amazon, some pretty tough questions.
So as you said, the council cannot actually block this deal. But isn't the whole point of Amazon's HQ2, or one of the points, to find a sunnier reception somewhere other than Seattle? I mean, that was part of what they were doing here, right?
Well, that was never explicitly said. It was certainly understood to mean that they were not thrilled with their first home in Seattle, this desire to look elsewhere. And that's kind of how it was taken here. But they I think they probably did expect to get a little bit of a warmer reception. And since they've been getting so much backlash in New York, they've actually hired a PR firm that works on political campaigns to do a lot of on the ground, changing hearts and minds, trying to convince the community that this is going to be a good thing. But it's important to remember that while there are some very vocal critics like Speaker Johnson, New Yorkers are very split on this issue. There was a poll that came out last week that showed 57% of New York voters support the Amazon deal.
Gosh, what would happen if you ran that poll in Seattle? How many Seattleites would say they support Amazon being here?
I actually think something like this happened at a KUOW event, and they polled the audience about whether or not Amazon was good or bad for Seattle. And I think by a slim majority, the audience agreed it was bad for Seattle.
Ultimately, but if I remember that event correctly, it changed over the course of the debate. They did it once at the beginning and once at the end, and it changed. And I believe it changed toward the negative, if I remember correctly. I'd have to go back and look at that.
That sounds right. But yeah, I'm not 100% sure. But it's interesting being here in Seattle and watching Amazon's growth here and now seeing New York try to grapple with what it means. One thing that was fascinating about the city council meeting was you got the sense that these lawmakers are really paying close attention and studying Seattle and what happened here. So here's a clip from New York City Council member Brad Lander that really illustrates that.
I think we have the capacity to manage the growth that 25,000 jobs would represent and to do what's necessary to share them fairly. But we can only do that if we've got a strong local democracy. And given that Amazon threatened a capital strike when the city council in Seattle tried to address the housing and homelessness crisis, something that would have amounted in its first year to $12 million of your $178 billion annual revenues, supported a Chamber of Commerce effort to undermine not just that law, but honestly, confidence of the people of Seattle in their government, led the effort to preempt cities in Washington from adopting stronger pay equity laws, conducted a bidding process that was a Hunger Games race to the bottom of 238 cities, giving you all this data you could use in future deciding decisions, required the 20 finalists to sign a non-disclosure agreement, hiding the information about our bids from members of the public and their elected officials, and are choosing to go along with avoiding New York City's democratic land use review process. How can we possibly believe that Amazon will not continue to abuse its monopoly power to erode our democratic capacity to govern our city?
Wow.
Yeah, so we just heard from Brad Lander, New York City Council member, really pulling no punches and showing how closely the New York City Council has been watching Amazon's behavior in Seattle.
Wow. Do you think that Amazon thought they would be able to go to the other side of the country and basically leave the baggage behind, as it were?
I wouldn't be surprised if they thought that. I think it's a little naive, particularly in a city like New York. But I do think because the response they got during this HQ2 search was so positive and cities were bending over backwards to win them over, it's possible that it didn't really translate to them that those were economic development people, not necessarily everyday people or, you know, progressive politicians who are much more like the counterparts that we have here on the Seattle City Council.
I will say that I also think this is a function of the fact that they chose two big cities. Now, granted, Northern Virginia, Alexandria is a suburb of Washington, D.C., but it is a large metropolitan area. And obviously, Queens, New York City, it's the city. So that is one of those situations where if they had gone to Pittsburgh or, Raleigh, North Carolina, someplace like that, I think that the dynamic would be much, much different. I mean, if you're a New Yorker, you're like, who needs Amazon? We don't need them. 25,000 jobs, that's a drop in the bucket. And I think that's part of what's emboldening the representatives there to make this show, because ultimately it is a show.
It is. But yeah, I think that you make a really good point. If this was Pittsburgh, they would be rolling out the red carpet for Amazon. But this is New York and lawmakers are very engaged. There's a ton of media here. So there's a lot of attention on this meeting and on their rhetoric. And it's just not the same dynamic as if they'd gone to a mid-sized city where they could really portray the job growth as worth whatever incentives they were getting. I think it's hard for a lot of New Yorkers to see the 25,000 jobs as worth the $3 billion in incentives and some of the other obstacles or issues that this project might bring.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really kind of one of those situations where you wonder if they were fully aware of what they were getting themselves into. A lot of this just kind of seemed like it rolled out as it rolled out. And I don't know how much forethought Amazon put into the decisions. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
We'll never really know because it is a pretty secretive company, but it was really interesting to see Brian Huseman and Holly Sullivan, another Amazon executive, sitting there and fielding these questions, because in many ways it was the most candid reaction that we were getting on HQ2 from Amazon throughout this entire process.
Now, will they have similar public hearings in Virginia as well? How does that process work? And ultimately, what do these hearings mean? Do they matter? Does the council have to approve something here?
The council doesn't have approving or blocking authority. These hearings really are about having their say, about airing grievances, like I said, and showing their constituents that they are, at least in their rhetoric, taking a stand here. I don't think Amazon officials are scheduled to attend the next two hearings, but there are three total. So there's only one group of New York officials who has the authority to block this deal. It's called the Public Authorities Control Board. And they do have to sign off on it, but Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York has kind of indicated in some of his comments that the deal may not go through that board. And given the enthusiasm from Andrew Cuomo and New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, I would be really surprised if this deal doesn't go through.
Yeah. By the way, I did find that KUOW poll and live event that we were referencing earlier. So when the event began, the question was, is Amazon good for Seattle? And the yes votes initially totaled 56%, while the 44% of the audience voted no. By the end of the debate, it was 50-50. So the debate swayed people to be more negative against Amazon in Seattle, which is fascinating.
That is really interesting. I'd be curious to see something like that in New York, because like we mentioned, there was a poll that had 57% of New York voters saying that they thought the deal was a good idea. But after all of this negative press and debate and controversy that this is stirring up, I would be curious in 2 weeks if everyone still felt the same way.
All right. So that is Amazon HQ2, the latest. I know we're going to be continuing to cover this into 2019, which is when things really start to ramp up in these two areas. And also when we'll start to see some of the potential effects on Seattle as Amazon starts to focus its growth in these other two areas. Is that too much to say?
No, I think it's going to be fascinating. We're already seeing some cooling in the real estate market here. So once Amazon actually starts hiring in these locations, I'm going to be really curious what the dynamics are like here in Seattle.
Right. And don't forget, Amazon executives, employees, according to the original announcement, if they're still sticking with it, will have the option to move to one of these two locations. And the fact that it's now two locations makes it potentially more of a drain out of Seattle because you have that many more options.
There's a possibility of outbound migration, but another thing to think about is as Amazon is hiring and recruiting as it would normally, instead of giving folks the option to come to Seattle, it now has three different big attractive cities where people could go. So the inbound migration might also be affected.
All right. So that is HQ2. There was actually a big announcement about not HQ2, as we've been calling it around the GeekWire newsroom this week. We'll get into that right around the corner. You're listening to GeekWire, and we'll be right back.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
All right, welcome back. It's Todd Bishop, GeekWire editor.
And Monica Nicholsberg, GeekWire civic editor.
All right, so we just talked about Amazon's HQ2. Let's talk about Apple, because they announced plans to open a large campus in Austin, Texas this week. But in our backyard in Seattle, the interesting news was that Apple will be boosting its presence here by about double. The company said that it plans to increase its employment in the Seattle area to more than 1,000 people over the next few years, which is really interesting. Now, Apple already has a pretty sizable presence here. They have about roughly room for about 500 people at 2 Union Square, the big skyscraper in downtown Seattle, and other operations in other parts of the city, and of course their retail operations. But the fact that they singled out Seattle was interesting to me from that recruiting perspective, because they will be putting themselves in even more of a position to poach employees from Microsoft and Amazon. And actually increasingly Google and Facebook, which have large offices here.
So what are the other two offices besides Seattle that made the cut?
Both of them were in Southern California, San Diego and Culver City.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you're from Southern California, and I'm the Northern California guy over here. So, like, what would you think of that? Why would they pick those two places?
Culver City makes sense if they want to double down on entertainment and some of their video content. As for San Diego, I mean, Qualcomm is based there, and I could see it being a recruiting advantage. You know, employees might like to live by the beach in sunny, warm San Diego. But I'm actually more interested in the Austin campus because, you know, I know we keep bringing up Amazon, but it's interesting to compare and contrast the two deals, which ostensibly are pretty similar, especially now that Amazon is opening smaller headquarters or offices or whatever you want to call them. But I think Apple received some incentives to go to Texas, too. Is that right?
That's right. They're getting a $25 million grant from the state of Texas. So not nearly on the same scale as the $3 billion in incentives that Amazon's getting just in New York.
Yeah, up to $3 billion. But yeah, it's certainly a smaller scale, but it's also getting a lot less attention, probably because of the way that Apple went about this. It wasn't a public bidding war. It was more of a traditional economic development deal that happened mostly privately, kind of below the radar until they were ready to announce.
Now, some people might say that means Amazon's a better negotiator. They played this process to their advantage better than Apple did. But others might say that Apple's a better citizen by going in and not extracting all of those tax dollars from its new home.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of moving parts in this debate. I've heard the argument that Amazon having such a public bidding war was good for cities because it raised their profiles. Now, when we say a public bidding war, that doesn't really mean that it was a transparent process because most of the cities were required to sign non-disclosure agreements. And that's actually part of the big criticism that we're seeing now. You could also level that criticism at Apple because there was also a lack of transparency in their deal with Austin. And it just gets to the heart of this broader discussion of economic development and whether cities should be in the business of giving away tax dollars to corporations and whether they really get a good return on that investment.
So Apple's new Austin campus will be 133 acres with capacity for up to 15,000 employees. So that's starting to get in the realm of the 25,000 that Amazon will have in each of New York and Washington, D.C. This, though, is just one of the places where Apple will be expanding, in addition to Seattle, San Diego, and Culver City, where it, in each of those places they expect to expand to more than 1,000 employees over the next few years. They also mentioned Pittsburgh, New York, Boulder, Boston, and Portland. So I'm looking at that list. I know Pittsburgh and Boston were both on the Amazon HQ2 list. So that would actually sort of reinforce the notion that by competing for Amazon, these cities positioned themselves and honed their pitches to land other companies. And Apple is a high-profile employer to either bring to or have expand in your city.
That's true. But then you could also make the argument that the reason those cities landed on Amazon's top 20 list is because they already had a lot to offer as places for tech jobs.
Yeah. Well, and in the Seattle region, the interesting thing here is that we've already seen more than 100 companies from outside the region, tech companies, establish engineering centers here.
Yeah, and I think big picture, we're just seeing more and more signs of these giant tech companies distributing their operations across more offices, whether they're additional headquarters, campuses, satellite offices, whatever you want to call it. It seems like rather than staying clustered in the Bay Area or Seattle or these tech hubs, they're more interested in tapping new talent pools, bringing in more diversity, and kind of spreading their wings.
All right. For much more on both of these stories, go to geekwire.com. You're listening to the GeekWire podcast, and we'll be right back after this break with the Random Channel. Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with Monica Nicholsberg, and it's time for the Random Channel, that moment of the week where we talk about the random things that we were buzzing about behind the scenes at GeekWire. Monica, you've got a good one. I hear you've got a new status.
Yes, I'm very excited about this. I've been waiting for the Random Channel for this whole discussion because as anyone who has ever had the misfortune to be around me and my phone at the same time knows, I have a very cute dog. Her name is Scout, and you can follow us at Scout and Monica. That's our Instagram handle. And I really feel like I leveled up in the world because, well, backstory, and I'm going to show this to you. I took a particularly cute photo of her because I have a new phone, the Pixel 3, and it is finally like a camera worthy of her. And I had put all of the pillows and the sheepskin and blankets from our living room onto my bed because I was going to leave for the day. And sometimes she gets mad and destroys all those things. And of course, she crawled up in the middle of it. So I took a photo of her where it's just like a perfect model shot where she's laying on a sheepskin in front of all these colorful pillows and posted it on Instagram. And I had not one, but two Instagram accounts that sell dog products ask me if I'd be willing to model their products for money. Check this out.
What? Oh my gosh. So you are therefore an...
a social media influencer. Well, Scout is. I'm just a pageant mom. I haven't actually responded to them, though. I want to see, like, how many offers come in and if, you know, if there's, like, the top quality. If it's, like, Petco wants me to be their brand ambassador, maybe they pay more.
One of the people is Possum Shop. I don't know, Monica.
I'm not saying it's the highest caliber of offers, but, you know, I've been saying since we got Scout when she was a tiny puppy that she should be a model and that I'm just trying to make her Instagram famous. And this was a really big step toward that goal.
Well, best to you and Scout in your quest for Instagram fame.
Thank you.
Do you want to plug your account one more time to get a few followers?
No, it's fine.
It's Scout and Monica. Oh, boy. Yes. Scout is the office dog.
Yes.
At Geekwire.
She comes to work every day. She's very well behaved. We have another slightly less well-behaved dog who's been with us for the past couple days.
Slightly?
Well, I don't want to put him on blast. He's a puppy. He's learning.
Okay. All right. That would be the dog of GeekWire co-founder John Cook, who's not here to defend himself or his canine. Okay. So
what's your random channel
talk? I happen to have a very cute daughter.
That's true. You do.
She is getting into Legos big time. And it has been fascinating for me because I grew up with Legos, love Legos. You know, what could be more pure and simple and... you know, yes, you buy the Legos, but not really commercial. And, you know, it's not like you're sitting there doing an app or playing a game or, you know, it's like it feels it's wholesome.
Yeah. It fosters creativity and it's imaginative.
Yeah. Legos are evil, Monica.
What?
So here is what they do now.
Did you step on one in the middle of the night?
No. It's way more subversive than that.
Wow. Okay.
So here's what they've started doing. So back in my day. You know that I'm getting old when I say that. But back in my day, you bought a set of Legos, you built things, you took those things apart, and you built new things. And you, like, were creative with your same set of Legos.
Now, this is also my understanding of Legos.
Yes, yes. That is not how it works anymore,
what?
Monica. Yes. They have specific scenes that they sell to you. And I recognize there's tons of people out there laughing at me that I've just caught on to this. But what they do is they have series and scenes. And so your kids get the Legos, which these scenes can range, depending on the size, anywhere from 8 to 12 to 30 to 40 or more dollars. They get the Legos, they put together the scene, and they don't want to take it apart because it's now a toy that they've essentially assembled. It's essentially the model airplaning of Legos. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is you can't convince your kid to take the thing apart and then build something else because she wants the next one. And I recognize this may also be a comment on my parenting, but still, they've totally changed the business model for Legos. And I recognize that for the company, this is obviously very good, but it takes away the whole wholesome thing. So last week, I said to her, okay, I will buy you a new set of Legos, but they have to be classic Legos. And we're going to go on the internet. We're going to look for lots of cool things you can put together because she loves following the instructions, which is another good thing. You know,
she loves following instructions.
She loves following the instructions to build something, which I think is a good fundamental underpinning of lots of other stuff. So we went and got the classic Legos, spent a lot of money on a big bin of them, like $30 or $40 on a big bin of Legos. You know what? She hasn't touched them.
She wants to make the scene.
She wants to make the scene. So anyway, I've been wrestling with this.
Well, I'm confused because is what you're talking about, like you go to the store and you see the boxes of the Legos and there's like Star Wars Legos or Lord of the Rings Legos and then you buy the box. That's been around for a really long time.
Yes, but it has exploded. It has completely exploded. And the thing that really pulled my daughter in is the Lego Friends series.
Oh.
And so you can basically – we talked about LOL Surprise Dolls on Geared Up a while back. It's the same idea. your kid ends up wanting the whole series.
Mm.
I don't have that scene yet of Lego Friends, but I do have this one. So I want the one I don't have yet. It's, to me, it's just kind of, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. All right. So that is my mild rant, probably appropriate for the holidays there, but not nearly on the level of your new Instagram fame.
Yeah, but you know, all topics are welcome here in the Random Channel, and it sounds like you know what you're getting your daughter for Christmas, so.
Yes, that's true. That's a good point. All right, hey, thanks for joining us, everybody. Be sure to subscribe to the GeekWire podcast if you haven't already. And don't forget, check out our other podcasts. We will soon be launching a new season of our Health Tech podcast and our recently launched Numbers Geek podcast with Steve Ballmer. So be sure to check that out. Two GeekWire podcasts in addition to the main GeekWire podcast and our weekly summaries and news roundups here on GeekWire. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Monica Nicholsberg.
We'll talk to you next time on GeekWire.